Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. If Bob didn't say it, then it probably ain't true. This is Primetime Sports with a man who cannot tell a lie. Bob McCown. Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Friday, October 24th, 2014. It's prime time. On the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks, Bob McCown, Stephen Brunt, John Shannon, Arash Madani will join us later. He is late. That's a common theme today.
Now, without your ears on, what if something happens? What if there are messages from beyond the glass there? Am I just going to relay them to you? Is that my job?
They'll wave at me.
Where's your headset?
It's in Ryan's drawer, which he broke his key in today.
Get out of Dodge.
And Bob doesn't like the conventional ones.
Well, no.
I just spent the last hour wearing these earmuffs. I hate these things.
And just look what it does to your hair, Bob.
Yeah, it's a mess.
Yeah, well, there you go. See? There's the answer. Does that
look
better?
Oh, my. That is awful. I wouldn't wear those.
But I think for safety's sake, you should have them on, just in case all hell breaks loose.
Well, then I can hear you.
No, I'll just sit here. I'll just go.
That's what you usually do.
That's
during
exactly
round
right.
table.
That's right.
Just steal the money.
Hold on. You guys are getting paid?
One of us is.
That's him.
Oh, look. A volunteer.
Oh, God bless you. Are these yours?
Yes.
I can borrow them?
Yep. Sid has...
I'll put them in the drawer.
Sid Sixero, on his way to pick up Flaming Cheese...
I may cry.
...has brought in
Hang on. I can't put him in the drawer. The drawer's got a key in it. It's hermetically sealed.
You are a trusting soul.
Oh. Ryan, you are in charge of Sixero's headset.
Yeah, put him in the drawer.
On one condition, the last block is Barcelona Real Madrid
free. That takes care of those. No headsets for me.
Reel your headset in. You need it.
Come on, you need it. You just broke them, but that's other than that. It's good.
Stuff could be happening. Bulletins could be arriving.
These are virtually identical to mine, too. Hang on, let me see. Oh, they work better, too. Good. Are you happier now?
I am very happy.
Yeah, I feel
more
secure.
I'm only happy, Bob, if you're happy. And I think Stephen would endorse that.
So the calendar year, John.
Good luck with that.
365 days of the year. It's kind of bleak, isn't it?
Well, usually Saturday and Sunday are good.
Yeah, those are okay, however Bob's feeling.
I'm going golfing tomorrow.
Bugger.
Did I invite you or did
I not
invite you?
Yes, you invited me. I'm working tomorrow.
What time? Are you not working at 8:30 in the morning?
No, I have to be at the rink by 10:30.
Why? At the rink.
Research.
Really?
Yes.
Come on. You just want to go there to have a coffee with your pals and look like you're doing something. You're going to the morning skate.
Always go to the morning skate.
That's
where you learn stuff.
What did you learn last week?
Oh, I can't remember. Oh, they were on the road.
Last time you went to a morning skate?
Lots of stuff.
You didn't learn anything.
Who's playing, who's not playing, who's hurt.
By the time, I can tell you that by the time you go on the air at 6:30 or 7 o'clock or whenever the hell you go
on.
I'm
on at 5 on the national pregame show.
You can still find out. With all your contacts?
I know, but going to the skate is part of the tradition, the routine of a Saturday at Maple Leaf Gardens in the Air Canada Centre.
Well, you can go. Are you going to Maple Leaf Gardens then? Is that where you're going to go?
There's boxing at Maple Leaf Gardens.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know. The World Canadian Boxing Championship or whatever it is tomorrow, isn't it?
Canadian Heavyweight Championship of a sort.
Anyway, so I'm, but I'm
Saturday,
going to
Saturday, boxing at Maple Leaf Gardens.
Thank you, Paul.
Drive safely. Toronto goal.
Everybody can do Paul Morris, can they? So apparently, so I want to talk about Madden, but apparently I have to wait for Arash to get here?
Yes.
Why? Does he know something?
He knows a lot. This is where
you want me to lead with the second story.
This is why you have your headphones on, so you can get this information. And now you have it.
Well, but I'm being told I can't lead with Madden.
Yeah, I think we're going to do that when Arash gets here.
Well, why? I mean, is he going to make a massive contribution?
I think he will.
He better.
I guarantee.
I'm holding you responsible, bro.
For Arash? Okay, I'm responsible for
Maybe
Arash.
Maybe he was in Joe's wedding party.
He was?
I don't know. I said maybe. I mean, maybe there's something that we don't know about Arash's relationship with Madden.
Yeah, he spends a lot of time around the ball club. He's probably spent a lot of time around the race. I think it'd be valuable to have him here if we can. But
now
he's in parts unknown right now.
He's in the building somewhere.
Well, we think so.
No, I've seen him.
Okay, that's a start.
He did a hit about Steve Nash. That's
right.
Well, that's what he did about Zdeno Chara.
Yeah. So you know,
so
yeah,
he'll be here for Steve Nash as well.
Yeah, once again, television is more important than radio.
So just shuffle the list.
I'm going to shuffle the guests. That's what I'm going to do.
Okay. Well, we're the only two you've got right now.
And we're here.
That's plenty. I mean, do we need four for a round table? We don't need four.
We do.
It's kind of like a three-legged stool.
It's traditional.
You do three-legged stools all the time.
Yes.
On your little hockey show there.
No, Bob, I'm just an announcer on the hockey show.
That's a pronouncer, not an announcer. Well, I guess we better not talk about Steve Nash either, because he might know something about Steve Nash.
Yeah, let's hold on to that one for a bit. So we've got lots of topics. It's a busy week.
In fact, looking at all the topics, can we play music until Arash gets here?
Because you think he knows something about everything?
Everything. Arash knows something about everything.
That's not a bad idea.
Play music.
I'd be happy with that, boy.
You can spin the discs, Bob.
Call my tea in private. Oh, look. So now here's the music.
See? That's why you wear heads.
Regular programming will resume shortly.
We think. Maybe not.
Remember those days?
Oh, sure. The only thing missing, and don't give Hal any ideas, would be color bars.
Hal, can you call up bars? Show the bars on TV.
There you go. Look.
We got bars.
Or in the old days,
it should be the little Target thing.
Now, you know what we need with the bars? What do you get with bars?
Chicken. Whatever that thing was in the middle. What was the thing in the middle of the Target?
I want to be politically correct.
Okay.
You know what you need with bars, though? Bars and tone.
Tone. Well, some would say that.
You need tone with those bars.
Oh, bars and tone, please.
All right, lose the music. That's enough of that.
Okay.
It's good leaving here.
There's tone. We got everything. All right, okay. That's funny. We get it. Because it's my own fault I asked for it, right?
Yes, you did.
The Canadian Hockey League has been slapped with a lawsuit. Demanding that players be paid minimum wage as participants in the Canadian Hockey League. How do we feel about this? I know how Brunt feels about
this. Yeah, you
do. What do you think?
Well, I think it's professional hockey for everybody except the players. That it is a money-making operation.
For some.
Well, it's designed to be a money-making operation. They sell tickets. They sell TV rights. They don't run this as – this isn't minor hockey.
No.
And, in some places it generates a ton of revenue. And I think the notion that players, are getting the same stipend that they got essentially when Bobby Orr was playing is probably not fair. Mm-hmm. And the much vaunted scholarship program, which is great, because one of the tiny little scandals in Canada for many, many years was the fact that all of our great hockey heroes had grade 10 educations. And for those guys, it didn't matter. It didn't matter if Jean Beliveau dropped out in grade 11 because it worked out okay for Jean Beliveau or Bobby Orr, but it's all the other guys.
Right.
Now they have a scholarship system, but which is not what it's kind of cracked up to be, though. You have to, negotiate as a player going into a team how much of that is going to be automatic and guaranteed. And, of course, there is the question of how many of these guys take them up on it in the end. So, sort of like the mail-in rebate coupon. You do those kind of things because a certain number of people aren't going to bother mailing it in. But it's better than nothing and better than the way it was. Mm-hmm. But I don't I do think these guys should be better compensated for the value they create because they're stars. You know, it's a star system. People pay to see them. And you can the CHL can say, oh, we'll all go broke if we do that. But, you know, people said they would all go broke if, you know, factories had to use a 40-hour work week, right? They always say they're going to go broke.
Let me ask you something. How many hours a week do you think a junior hockey player actually, quote-unquote, works?
I don't know. But, you know, let's come up with a number. I don't know. I'm not a junior hockey player, but let's come up with a number.
Let's say he plays 3 games a week.
Yep. Travel.
And travel.
Travel doesn't count.
Yes, it does.
Well, it has to. You have
really?
To,
yeah, if you've got an hourly wage and you have...
If you travel for your job, it counts.
And it's true for all of us. If
like hell.
Oh, no. No.
I don't get paid to come to work.
No. But if you're on a plane going to work.
There is a compensation if you travel out of town for work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you shouldn't get compensated from going from the mansion to the studio. But if you said, well, we're going to be going to Winnipeg, we're going to Calgary, we're going to go to Edmonton, you would be compensated either with days off or you'd be compensated financially. You'd be compensated with mileage if you drove.
All right.
I mean, that's natural.
That's the rule.
The two things that...
So how many hours do you think it is?
Well, I would say that it's probably a 50-hour work week. I would say it's a 50-hour work week. I do.
How long do you think practices are?
Well,
2 hours?
I think all-encompassing 2 hours, yeah.
So 2 hours a day.
So 5 days, that's 10 hours a week of practicing. You got your 3 or 4 games, which is, again, probably 5 hours.
No, it's not 4 games. They don't play 4 games a week.
Well, you play Friday, Saturday, Sunday for sure.
No, you play 2 of those days.
Okay.
Most of them play 2 of those days.
All right, okay. But basically, you've got a 68-game schedule in the regular season.
I'll give you 3 games a week.
Okay.
That's 3 hours. So we're at 19 hours with practices and games.
Okay, then you got travel time. I would add another 10 to 12 hours for travel time.
Okay, so now we're at about 30 hours a week.
All right, that's fair. Maybe 30 is the right number.
Okay, so minimum wage is what now?
A little over 10 bucks an hour, but that's what you get for flipping burgers.
Well, he's asking for minimum wage.
Well, I would argue these guys are worth more than that.
You would argue that everybody's worth more than
No, they have a set of skills. Not everybody can go play junior hockey.
I guess the downside for me on that one, Stephen, and this is where I'm troubled a little bit by it. Nobody is forcing these guys to go. This is as much as there's a perception at times that this is the only way to get to professional hockey. There are other options, and in many ways, particularly for the larger percentage of guys that won't go to pro hockey. I mean, nobody's twisting their arm to do this.
No.
Nobody's saying you have to play hockey.
But no one's forcing anybody to take any job. Again, I'm just saying it's a job.
But you take the job based upon a set of criteria. You took your job. You left the Globe and Mail to come and work at Sportsnet based upon a set of criteria that you determined was good for you.
But then no one's work conditions in any event anywhere would ever change. Right? We would all just say, boy, you know, they used to get paid, you know, 50 cents an hour to work in factories. And so, you know, that's what they accepted. So why would they ever pay them more? You know, people's work conditions change because they're unfair.
But we're not talking about work conditions. We're talking about...
No, we are. That's what salary is included in your working conditions. You know, compensation is is the number one thing in your working conditions.
So
it's not fair.
Hang on a second.
Okay.
If junior hockey was a money-losing operation, as it was... in many municipalities for a long period of time, you had guys that owned junior hockey teams were benevolent. They did it as a hobby.
Well, that's a huge generalization. You know, did you see the books? You know, they weren't paying kids then either. They were charging money for the team for admission. You see the books?
No, but I mean, I know that what attendance used to be like, and I know there were no.
Well, but I presume these guys were all these were charitable things.
Well, I know, I also know. But it was not uncommon for a local guy, a local businessman, out of ego, maybe because it could have helped his local business, his stature in the town, I'll own the hockey team. I'll fund the hockey team. Now, do I know if they made money? I'm sure some of them did make money, but I'm also sure some of them lost money, too.
Well, that's their choice. That would be their choice, then.
But it wasn't done as a business venture. It wasn't viewed as a business.
By whom? You know, if you charge admission for something, it's business.
The only thing I would say is that the biggest problem is that the disparity in my mind, a lot of this is the disparity between the ownerships. I mean, there's no revenue sharing in junior hockey.
No,
per se.
I guess there's some according to Dave Branch, but I'm not sure.
National sponsorship, but I mean when it's not like other leagues or that say, okay, we're going to help Owen Sound. Owen Sound never makes money.
Okay.
I mean, Scotty Abbott, who owned the Brampton Battalion, at the end of the year, wrote seven-figure checks.
Well, but he chose to be in the junior hockey business, John.
I'm not justifying. I'm just saying that factually, it's not. Not everybody's the London Knights.
Yeah, but you make it sound, you know, I mean, you always paint the picture of the businessman, the entrepreneur, as some kind of an evil person.
No, I'm just saying, why are they doing it? No, they're doing it to make money.
Well,
Bob.
I said, you know, I don't think that Scott Abbott did it to make money.
Well, then he did it for ego or for a hobby or whatever. But
exactly.
Which is
what I said. So, can I finish, please? Let me get to the point. Nice of you to join us. We start at 5. So, the point I was trying to make here is I'm not necessarily adverse to the notion of kids being compensated either through a minimum wage or something else. As long as you understand it, they're probably going to claw away some other things in order to try and balance the, I don't know. But
who pays the room and board for the kids?
They pay the billets. The team pays the billets, right? They've received compensation.
So
that's a fee.
That's a level of fee.
Well, but that's saying you're going to give them sticks, John. Like, I mean, it's the cost of doing business.
No, it's not. No, that's ridiculous. Nobody has ever suggested
that Dave Branch came on here and said that one of the things they gave them were sticks.
I understand, but that's, you know. The point is, you made the reference earlier of guys getting paid basically the same as Bobby Orr got paid. It's my understanding guys in CHL now get $480 a month. Not $50 a week, like the lawsuit suggested, or what Bobby Orr got, which I think was $60 a month when he played. Now, is that enough? I'm with you on the argument it might not be enough, but it's not nothing. And they do get room and board, and they get their meals. I think most of their meals are provided. If they're on the road, they get them from the team. If they're at home, they're provided by the billet. That's part of the deal. So, maybe they're entitled to more than that. But it's not that they're getting nothing. And to hang the whole thing on the education program, I think is a real lost leader. It's just, no kid goes to play junior hockey. He goes to play junior hockey because he wants to be in the NHL. Mm-hmm. He goes to play junior hockey because he has a skill set at hockey. He doesn't go there to get I'm going to play junior hockey so that I can go to university after my junior hockey career fails. I don't think that's anybody's mindset. So I think the offer of a scholarship, whatever it happens to be, is a benefit, a bonus,
it's extra. It's a way of keeping kids from going to the NCAA. It's self-serving. That's what it is.
Not really, because if they go to the NCAA, then they're going there and they're in an educational institution. Whether they choose to take advantage of that or not is entirely up to them.
Well, it isn't, but because they remain eligible to play for the team. They have to be
But a kid playing junior hockey cannot go to university at the same time. This is for after his career.
Yeah, but it's because people, you know, sensible kids' parents who understood that their kids' odds of making the National Hockey League were small, even if they get to major junior hockey, were saying, I got a choice. My kid can go to Michigan State on a full ride, and, you know, he may not succeed academically, but he's going to have that opportunity, or he can go play junior hockey and, you know, and get through high school. Now, they didn't used to get through high school, and then what? You know, what after he plays his 1 year in the ECHL?
But don't you see that as a tangible benefit?
No, it's a benefit. It's just not a guarantee. It's not what it's cracked up to. Number one, the reason it's there is for self-serving. It's not charity. It's because they had to compete for those kids.
Self-serving, that's a little harsh, dude.
But they are competing for those kids, John.
No, there's no question that they created the scholarship program to compete with the NCAA, to say, hey, listen, come with us and you can get an education just like you apparently will get an education when you go to U.S. college.
Except there's a big asterisk attached.
Well, it is. If you turn professional, then you don't have access to it. That becomes the real factor in all this.
Well, plus again, as Dave Branch told us the other day, you know, how much of that scholarship is guaranteed is negotiable. You know, players negotiate. So the best guys, the guys with the most leverage, are the guys who can say, okay, if I play one game here, I've got 4 years guaranteed. Mm-hmm. And they'll say yes.
Yeah.
The guy who actually needs it the most, who's the guy at the end of the bench who's not ever going to play professional hockey, he can't do that. So he might get a half a year if he bombs out in his first year.
Is this not the conversation, though, that's happening south of the border now with so many
football and
Division I basketball scholarships? I'm going to take your point, Bob. How many high school kids go to Alabama, Florida, Florida State, USC, Nebraska, Michigan State.
Yeah, okay, we
got you name them. With the thought of, I'm just going there to go to the National Football League.
Are those on athletic scholarships?
Yeah.
All?
Yeah.
They're not.
Yep.
Duke, North Carolina, now Butler, Connecticut in basketball, on a Michigan State, on and on and on. You commit, you sign your letter of intent. Why? With the intention of playing in the NBA.
Correct. 100%. Every one of them.
And I don't think there's a person around that, maybe I'm wrong, those kids deserve more than just the scholarship from my standpoint.
Yep.
And that's been the conversation throughout. And now with the O'Bannon case, there, I mean,
I'm not arguing that there may be, they may be entitled to more. All I'm trying to do is get an acknowledgement that there is some level of compensation above, you know, and people are trying to make a point.
But
Mr.
Bob,
Brun and this lawyer.
But Bob, they're providing hockey sticks to the NCAA kids. They're providing helmets to the Crimson Tide running back. They're giving shorts and sneakers to the Tar Heels point guard.
Well, you can make
an argument that they're putting them in a dorm and they're giving them a meal plan.
So what's the diff?
I mean, that's coming out of the budget of the university, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. I'm missing.
So it's just the same deal.
The point here.
Oh, I don't disagree with that.
We're not arguing that point.
Yeah.
But the point is, we all agree that those kids south deserve more than that.
Well, no, but here's
do we not?
Let's remember, and the same discussion will go on. How many athletic programs in universities in the United States make money? All of them?
No.
How many?
Few.
10%.
Oh. However, John.
We're talking
athletic programs,
10%.
Or are we talking sports? I mean,
like
the athletic
sports.
Program.
Like, you're going to talk about the whole athletic program.
Yeah,
that's a whole different deal because of football.
I don't fear this. I mean, when we talk about, and we've all talked on and off camera about, you know, there are some franchises in junior hockey that make a lot of money. They do very well. But at the same time, how do we handle this situation? Or is it even worth discussing handling a situation of that small market team in all three leagues, in all three junior leagues across this country that have no chance to make money
and
compete?
Well, that's up to them to figure out their business model, because that doesn't mean you can't compensating people, in another place you shouldn't, right?
Well, we agree.
If you're going to do for one, you got to do for all.
That's my point.
So
how
do you divide up
teams? You got 60 teams in junior hockey across this country. How do we decide which team survives, which team thrives? It's just we're going to end up with, you know, 12 teams in 12 big cities.
Well, hold on. Because in college basketball, which is the closest comparable from a number of, you know, you can't compare with football just because of the number of kids on a team. College basketball has about 17 guys, 15 on scholarship, and a couple of walk-ons. Okay? There are 300 Division I college basketball programs. Florida Gulf Coast University can still get to the Elite Eight.
This is the one place where I really feel that the biggest difference. All the universities, most of those universities do share in television revenue.
Depending on the conference.
And on conference and how many tournaments they play, whether it's a lot of those teams play in preseason tournaments to get the check.
But very few of them actually out of the 300 play in any kind of money preseason tournament.
So, when we talk about, you know, the great TV money that exists in junior hockey, we have to be practical about it. It's divided 60 ways. We're not even talking about $100,000 a team in junior hockey for television revenue.
But John,
doesn't Sportsnet own the television rights to the CHL?
I believe they've signed a 12-year deal.
And do we know the value of that deal?
I do not.
Do you think it is relatively nominal?
I think when you divide it per team, it is, again, it's not six figures per team. It's not.
By comparison to Arash's attempt, it's insignificant dollars.
And that's my point.
But Bob, it is compared to the SEC and the ACC and the Big Ten and the Big East. There are countless programs that nobody has ever heard of that won't make the NCAA tournament, that won't make the NIT, that are existing on, you know.
And profitable?
Barely.
But I was saying, John, it's but in, you know,
maybe it, maybe not. I mean,
if you've got huge disparities
other
in revenue among,
yes,
okay,
which you do.
We would, but this is the same discussion we'd have. We were talking about professional sports because this is professional sport, effectively. you would say, well, if you've got huge revenue discrepancies among franchises, as they did in the CFL, for instance,
right.
You know, then you have to come up with a business model in which you share enough of that revenue, because you don't say, well, this team's really successful, so they should be paying these guys this, but these guys are going broke.
It's up to
them to figure it out.
Steven, I understand that. But
that's not justification for paying the players nothing.
Nobody's suggesting that.
Well,
we're not suggesting. Has anybody here said they shouldn't get paid?
Well, the head of the CHL has.
Right.
Well, he thinks their compensation plan is sufficient. I think what is interesting
here. What else is he
gonna say, Bob? Well, here's my concern, and nobody around this table can speak to this issue with great background and knowledge, because we are guessing at what the revenues and the costs of operating a CHL franchise are. We assume a team like London, who draws 9,000, probably makes money.
I'm thinking that's pretty safe.
They do well.
Halifax, right. Same deal.
Halifax does well.
A couple of years ago, our production company followed the Saskatoon Blades around. I recall watching episodes where they went into Prince Arthur, I think it was.
Prince George or Prince Albert.
And there was, you know, 500 people in the building. And that was basically what they drew. My guess is it's pretty hard for them to make money, especially with the kind of travel commitments that you have in Western Canada. You got a lot of long bus trips.
Sure.
And you got to stay overnight a lot.
Well,
like a lot of hotel rooms.
And the rule in the Western Hockey League is that you cannot fly.
Yeah.
You cannot fly during the regular season.
So,
what they're asking for is minimum wage here. So either the argument is they don't deserve minimum wage, or they deserve something less than minimum wage.
Like, okay,
that's all they're asking for.
All right. So, but wait a second. You have to be a realist about this. We already have established that the CHL is not happy about the notion of paying the players. Therefore, it is to be expected that some of the perks the players now get are going to be taken away.
Which perks? Give me a perk that they're going to take away.
$480 a month is what they get now. They get billets. Well, they get a place to stay. They get food. They get a college compensation. They get a college degree.
Well, maybe.
Do you get
maybe.
Food?
Well, the press box, they fed us. They always have fed us, right?
You pay for it, don't you?
Well, now you do, but they, you know, you pay a minimal amount of money.
Well, pay for it. You pay for food.
Oh, boy.
The problem is,
pay them their real value, okay? Because, take all that away and pay them what they're actually worth then, as entertainers.
What is it? What are they worth?
A lot more than $10 an hour.
What are they worth?
Well,
are they worth the same thing as NHL players are worth in relative terms?
No, they're not.
They're not worth 50% of all revenues.
But Bob, just going back to your previous point, I don't think the attendance in these buildings matters, is significant. Why? The Florida Panthers play in front of nobody. The Toronto Maple Leafs sell out every night.
But the
CFL, there's nobody. Nobody is at the Rogers Centre for an Argo game. You can't get a ticket to Mosaic Stadium. That's just how leagues work.
I understand, but what I'm trying to get
and
at here we don't know what the revenue streams actually are. What is the actual profitability? You and I can sit here and have a very advised conversation about whether how much the Florida Panthers might lose.
Right.
And we'd be pretty close.
And to Steven's point, that's their choice to lose it.
Yep.
And we could have the same conversation about the Toronto Argonauts versus the Calgary Stampeders.
Sure.
You know, pretty good, or Saskatchewan Roughriders, for example. Pretty good idea. Okay, what are the London? What's the profitability of the London Knights? What do the Hunters make there? Million? 5 million a year?
Right.
50 million a year?
Well, you probably figure it out pretty easily because, you know, again, they're not paying the players.
Go ahead, do the math.
You know, 9,000 tickets. What's the average ticket price? You tell me.
I don't know.
You know, but it's more than nothing. Mm-hmm. And if they're paying the players nothing, you know.
But that's not their only expense. You know,
yeah, they have to pay for the buses. You're right. You know, that's the cost of doing business.
But they pay for the billets too.
Jeez.
And they pay for
and
equipment.
The sticks. Don't forget the sticks.
They pay for the equipment. I mean, you can't be that naive to think that there are no expenses in running the business.
I think the expenses are pretty much what they've been for the entire history of junior hockey. I don't think they've changed very much. You know, not at all.
You don't think the cost of a stick is more today than it was then?
Boy, job. They put 9,000 people in that building at real prices every night. And you're talking about sticks?
No one's arguing that they make money, but you're being ridiculous
and suggesting you buy a lot of sticks with that bus.
Bob, we've established the television money is negligible. We all agree, correct?
Yeah.
The sponsorship money will vary from market to market, no question. I really can't see it being that significant. This is still a league, like the Canadian Football League, that the fundamental business model there is still selling tickets 2x2.
Okay, can we get? Let me get to this point, because I've been trying to get there, and I keep getting waylaid. If I own a junior hockey team,
yeah,
and you say to me, "We want you to pay the players," and I say, "Okay, I think that sounds reasonable," and I do think that sounds reasonable. But if I'm going to pay you this amount of money, here's what it's going to cost me, and if it's going to cost me that, I'm not paying for your billet, and you're not going to get an education program, and whatever other perks they may have, I may want to take those, claw those back too.
Cool. I'm off to South Bend.
Well, okay.
I'm going to Lansing.
Yeah. And the problem is
where you get an education, but you don't get paid. So the question is, what do you want? What do you really want? Because the kids,
you're
that are,
gonna
going,
get room
the kids that are going to South Bend aren't getting $480 a month, and that's nothing. Right. I get that that's nothing, but that's something. It is something extra that they get.
I don't know. Come on, man.
You don't think that's what's going to happen? You don't think that the response to a legal action or a demand for the players to get paid some amount of money is not going to result in them trying to claw back some of the other things
that they
provide?
If it's billets and food and sticks, no, I don't.
You think employees are entitled to housing? Cite the case of an employee that's entitled to housing.
I thought these are amateurs, Bob.
You're making them professionals.
We've already agreed to pay them.
So we're going to pay them. But you want them to get paid and have everything they had.
Yes.
Because you don't like the idea that somebody actually makes money in business.
I give. I'm sorry. Yeah. Reopen the sweatshops, man. People wanted a 40-hour week. Are you kidding? Man, we're all going to go broke. 2 weeks of holidays a year, we're going to go broke. You know, get rid of that child labor. How are we going to run the mines without those kids?
100,000 people show up to the Big House every week. They give those kids scholarships. Bob, they give them scholarships and room and board.
I'm in favor of them getting paid. I'm in favor of it.
Just trade for food.
I'm not opposed to it. I'm saying they're going to claw that back. And what do you want?
God, those poor hunters.
Be careful what you ask for.
How are they going to pay their bills? Jeez.
All right.
Wow.
We'll move on. 28 before the hour. It's prime time on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Nineteen minutes before the hour, prime time continues. Steve Nash hurt his back and will not play this season for the Los Angeles Lakers. That announcement made jointly by the player and the team. Which raises the issue of the question, I suppose, of when Nash announces his retirement. Because it would seem to me, Shannon, that this is an inevitability. He's going to announce his retirement. I don't know anybody that has had an injury that is similar to this, that cannot be really treated with a surgical procedure, that could theoretically be better tomorrow morning and then be worse 2 days from now, that announces he's not going to play for the whole season. He wouldn't know what his ability to play for the whole season was. I think what he's really said is he hasn't got the ability to play ever again.
Well, but I'm not trying to be cold and callous about it. If he announces retirement, how much does he get paid?
Zero.
And I mean.
So there's the answer to that.
I not knowing the full depth of what Steve Nash and the conversation the Lakers have had,
right.
And therefore how much? What are the cap ramifications? The soft cap ramifications for the Lakers in all this, and what are the ramifications for long-term injury relief in these situations?
So this is Chris Pronger part two.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Yeah.
Right.
The point is, we we don't have to wait for Steve Nash to announce his retirement.
No.
That's what this is.
Or to join basketball operations and video reviewing.
Right.
So
he will,
at a
the days
point.
And weeks after the season ends, have a song and dance.
It's beyond obvious to suggest he's the best player this country has ever produced to date. That goes without saying. There's no argument there. I'm not even going to have a conversation about it. But there's an interesting discussion taking place about his influence on the advancement of the sport in this country and whether his influence is greater than, equal to, or less than somebody like Vince Carter. And let's be honest, we've attributed some of the interest in and advancement in basketball in this country to Vince. Some of it to Nash, which is, can we evaluate which has been more important?
I think the area where Steve Nash stands out differently than Vince Carter is before Steve Nash, it was beyond rare for a Canadian to get a Division I NCAA scholarship. Steve Nash had one offer from Santa Clara.
Mm-hmm.
And he went down there, and the idea that a Canadian could even play in the NCAA tournament, let alone be on a 15 seed to upset number 2 Arizona, was so far-fetched that no Canadian could have even dreamed of such a thing. I mean, there was an audacity to the idea. Steve Nash, maybe a lot of kids today, the Wiggins, the Stauskas, the Bennetts, the Thompsons, maybe they watched Vince and said, I want to be Vince. But I think what Steve Nash did was help pave the way for a lot of Canadian kids to get noticed, get recruited, and open the doors to playing an elite level of college basketball.
There were a few Canadian players that did actually get scholarships long before Nash.
Sure.
Yep.
The impact, what he did with it.
But realistically, the impact of Nash, even to the NCAA, the impact really didn't occur while he was at Santa Clara, did it? It was when he finally and fought his way to the NBA and the opportunities he had those first 3 or 4 years in Dallas and in Phoenix. That's when we really noticed Steve Nash.
You know what I'd say? I'd say to you that Nash's influence might have been nominal until he won the MVP the first time.
No, I wouldn't say that because, I mean, let's just remember for those who may not know or have forgotten. Steve Nash was the 15th overall pick in the first round of the 96 draft. He was booed in Phoenix when the Suns took him.
Mm-hmm.
Within the first 2 years, they ran him out of town. He was traded to Dallas. It was there he had Michael Finley on one side, he had Dirk on the other. Within a couple of years, he was an all-star, and he didn't become an MVP until he was 30, after his, into his 30s, when he went back to Phoenix as a free agent.
I get all that. In fact, I'm a basketball fan.
I'm with Bob on this, though, that I think that's the moment, in terms of kind of shifting the culture here a little bit. I think Vince Carter had more of an impact on the wave of basketball players we're seeing right now than Steve Nash did, period.
I tend to agree, too.
But I think the two things with Steve Nash, where it changes the conversation, one is the fact that he was the best player in the league, that he was, arguably the best player in the world.
Yeah.
Which was something that no Canadian could have ever contemplated, that a Canadian would be the best basketball player in the world. And the other is the Olympics. And don't forget that Olympic team
in Sydney
and the run they went on and the fact that he played for his country there.
But the Eureka,
those are the two things.
The Eureka moment really wasn't for Canadians when it comes to Nash. The Eureka moment was for scouts and coaches of college teams in the United States that said, hey, there's a pool of small pools of athletes in Canada, we should probably be going and mining, whether it be in the Lower Mainland of British Columbia or whether it be the GTA.
Jamal McGlure, Denham Brown.
Well, that awareness
they didn't turn out to be Nash's, but
no.
But that awareness
they were players
didn't occur for a long. I mean, even though they were sending scouts as Nash was playing at Santa Clara, it still took a long time to mature.
Well, you got to remember too, when Nash came in, there was virtually no international. There were virtually no international players in the NBA. I mean, that was just starting. That was the beginning of it.
Right.
I mean, there were a handful of guys, But there were, like, every team didn't have one.
Right.
Most Americans probably didn't realize he was an international player first. You know, like, I think most Americans assumed he was American.
I mean, other than the Yugoslav players, which sort of let, I mean, as a group, Serbians and Croatians, you know.
Bivak.
Yeah. Like, other than those guys, was there another country that was producing NBA quality basketball players that were coming over here? Not really.
Yeah.
I think they were the only ones. And then you had the odd Canadians sprinkled in there. And, of course, now it's an entirely different scenario. You're mining basketball players all over the world.
And really what was happening, it wasn't, you know, we touched on it before, how the big money schools in the United States. It wasn't the big money schools giving Canadian scholarships. It was the second tier school. Santa Clara is a great example. At the point, Gonzaga at a point was that way.
Absolutely.
Because that was the only, those are the athletes they could compete for. They weren't going to compete for the, you know, the McDonald's All-Americans. Right. They were going to go and we have to go and work harder to find players. And that's probably, I mean, there were great high school players in British Columbia long before Steve Nash that went to university and played college basketball.
Jay Triano, you know?
Well,
I
remember, yeah. I mean, Lars Hansen was a 7-foot-1 center that
Leo Routens played at Syracuse.
Pretty good
player at Syracuse.
Another guy named Howard Kelsey that played at
Virginia. We probably don't have time for this now, but
no.
The other part of this conversation is whether he's the greatest Canadian athlete of all time.
Right.
Period.
Yeah. Boy, he's...
Well, that's a good one.
Because it's the number two global sport today.
Yeah, and you can't answer that question, especially in this country. Because if you pick a hockey player, you're pro-hockey, and if you don't pick a hockey player, you're anti-hockey.
Yes.
So
my 1-1A is Donovan Bailey and Steve
Nash, I sat in enough rooms at I sat in enough rooms at the Lou Marsh to understand how that argument works. So you can't win that one. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. Other than hockey players, nobody's in the same league as
Donovan Bailey slash Ben Johnson.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, but there's the only two, though, that I would put in that conversation.
If somebody's supposed to say Bobby Orr and Wayne Gretzky, I guess it's my turn.
Yeah, no, I know. That's the greatest hockey players in history are pretty much Canadian, right? Yeah. Like, I think so. Yeah, we could probably find, you know, a couple of other people in that discussion, but essentially, sure. So,
And whether Nash or Gretzky or Nash... Nash or Orr, and what about Larry Walker? Well, what Larry Walker did as a baseball player.
See, I think what sends Nash apart for me is not that he was the NBA MVP. It's that he did it twice.
Right. Like, there have been a dozen guys ever to win it more than once.
And with due respect to the track and field guys, you know, we're not talking about guys who won multiple Olympics. And I know that's hard to do. Wow. I get that's really hard to do, but it has been done.
He won multiple golds, Bob. He won the 4x1 too.
Well, I understand that. Well, it's part of a team, and if you've got the fastest guy, you know,
Usain Bolt's part of a team too.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, Usain Bolt has won how many gold medals in the 100? Two, right?
Right.
But yeah, and he's Jamaica's greatest athlete. But you know, it's the depth of field. But 100 meters trumps everything.
Understand. You know, we could go here. We would sit here all day. It's that two. Those two. Set him apart for me that he did it twice.
Yeah, that's fair. That's totally fair.
And I don't know. And now you want me to compare him to Wayne Gretzky or Bobby Orr? Sorry, I can't do that.
And I just think that it's not only that he won two; he won it in a sport that's become so global. That you know, the best players in the world are they're playing in the Olympics. They're real competitive leagues around the world. The NBA. Look at the San Antonio Spurs. How many countries are represented on that team?
We'll leave that to your imagination, whether Nash was the most influential athlete or basketball player as a Canadian or in Canada, or is it Vince Carter? And the greatest athlete that this country has ever produced, he has to be in that conversation at the very least. When we come back, Joe Maddon shakes things up. Who's interested? We'll talk about it next.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.